Welcome back to the current review. This is Thamsanqa Tu from the TT Hookup. I am with my colleague, Mr. Teboho Kotsi from the ANZ podcast. We are joined together on Central News Live and doing the current review program today. We are being joined by the secretary, the national secretary of the United Democratic Movement. And we'll be talking about their reactions to the State of the Nation address that was delivered last week, and perhaps get a view from them about what do they see as the future of this country beyond the elections. Welcome to the show, to the current review, Mr. Zikebe. You are muted, I could say. We can't hear you.
Okay. Thank you very much to Tammy and Teboho and the entire Central News team, and also greetings to your viewers.
Quite quickly, do you know any Dinzwalos where you come from? Can you relate to the Dinzwalos of this world, of this country?
there are many of Dinzwalos that I know, but then I don't think all those Dinzwalos I know relate to the Dinzwalo of the President of the Republic. He painted a very beautiful picture of Dinzwalo at the just concluded State of the Nation address, and we were all in awe. And at some point, we thought that he was doing a stand-up comedy. And seriously, would implore the president to rethink his career prospects and go and join your Trevor Noahs of the day.
So you don't think that that story holds true for a lot of South Africans? Because I see that there is a possibility that there is a Dinzwalo with that narrative, and maybe a Thabo who lives a life different from that of Dinzwalo. You know, it's like the story of Alex and Zentin.
Let's say there is a Dinzwalo of that, you know, I'm thinking. That Dinzwalo was born in 94 in an RDP house provided by the taxpayers and not the ANC, because those are monies that you have been gloated about. That Dinzwalo lives in an RDP house, which has dilapidated because the material used, the quality of the house was not good enough. When rains are coming and when winds are blowing, Dinzwalo is in trouble because he's not in a home of good standards. We have a Dinzwalo who goes to school right now. Yes, there's food, but there's no breakfast, lunch, and supper in that. And what you get is a standardized kind of meal, a bread and milk, just so that they go by. In other schools, you find some other Dinzwalos, they don't even get that. In most schools in South Africa, in rural settings, even in townships, you do not get such provisions. We have a Dinzwalo who grew up and went to school from 94. The president must not tell us that there were no fees in primary schools at the time. As I started schooling in 94, we were paying about 50 rands or so in primary school. That was school fees. And if you had not yet paid up until March, your parents would be called into school to be asked, when are you paying for your child? Otherwise, you're not getting his or her report. So,
But I think he was saying that not that Dinzwalo went to school in 94, but Dinzwalo was born in 94 and today is almost 30. And therefore, his schooling may have started a bit later on when the governance was somewhat in progress, around maybe when he was seven years later from 1994, you know. And maybe from then on, there was an introduction of no fee schools in our country. And I'm thinking about this narrative, Mhlekazi, because I think the State of the Nation address may have been a reflection on the past 30 years the country, and maybe a glimpse into the future as to what will be. So I'm saying surely there must be some things that are positive that we can say these are the positives out of the democracy in the past 30 years. And definitely there are a lot of things that we can decry, but perhaps let me give you the opportunity just to talk about like what are your immediate reactions to the State of the Nation address.
Just to go to what you said before going to indeed that we do agree they've built RDP houses. We can clap for that, but they're not good quality. Indeed, they have introduced a no fee schools, but at the end of the day, the stationery that you are getting in schools, you have to top it up as parents because it's not so free. In other schools, they still are paying schools in South Africa till today. Not all public schools aren't paying up school fees. So in everything that they've done, there's a lot, there's 90%, they've done 10% and there's a shortage of 90% in it. Because as you go throughout the 12 months of schooling, things that are needed from school, you need a prep, you needed there's fundraisings and whatnot forth. That is not a free education, because a free education in our minds and in our mindset and our thinking is that in each and everything that is needed at school is provided for. And our parents should not be lifting a finger to make sure that we are going to school and we're getting these preps, the stationary calculators and so on. They're not provided for. So it's only free because there's no school fees in some schools. But every other thing in that particular school needs money. And why do they need money? We are not saying to schools that they must not fundraise. It's because the budget that has been granted to the basic education system, it's minimal. It's too small. The infrastructure budget as well. You'd find that our kids go into schools without windows, and they have to fundraise in order to get somebody to come and fix that, if they're lucky enough to cover those costs. So there are many other aspects and financial implications that you get in that schooling system. Then the question would be, when is it then free if I'm still required to pay certain things into the schooling system? Going back to SONA, our reaction is that President Ramaphosa, like our youth in 2019 and years coming after that, should have sent us a voice note and not to have wasted money and wasted state resources in putting up a whole hullabaloo of a State of the Nation and the red carpets and people dressing up nicely, so that he can rehash what he had said when he was coming into power after taking over from President Jacob Zuma. You remember in 2018 when he took over as a president, as a caretaker president, if I can put it like that, because he needed to take us to elections. The same things he has been talking about. Where is the smart city that the president had promised in 2018, in 2019, and years passed up until today? Where is the total eradication of load shedding? President Ramaphosa on Thursday announced that there are plans to eradicate or to stop load shedding forever, and very soon it will happen. 48 hours later, boom, it was stage 4. Before we knew it, a couple of hours later, it was stage 6. The country was in darkness for 4 hours in intervals. So you are making one promises, and the output of those promises, it becomes immediately something different. We have a minister here of electricity who reiterates what the president is saying. He's been in office for how many months? He is earning more than a million per annum. And this person, we are not seeing the results that we promised that we're going to see. In 2015, actually, President Cyril Ramaphosa, when he was deputy president of President Jacob Zuma, promised the country that in that particular year, load shedding would be a thing of the past. We are still living in a reality of load shedding till today. So all his other promises, you're speaking about corruption. Come on. They said they're going to clamp on corruption. What are they doing? The Zondo Commission report, it is gathering dust. in his office and there's no implementation. We are not seeing NPA moving in that direction to make sure that the big fishes of corruption in this country who were named and shamed at the Zondo Commission are being prosecuted, are being arrested, and the justice is taking its course. We are not seeing all of that. There's no action. But each and every year, each and every opportunity the president gets to speak to the nation, he promises us that corruption will be dealt with. When actually is corruption being dealt with? We need a government that is going to take action. Because if you see things, all the atrocities that we're facing as South Africans are atrocities that emanate or that comes from the root of corruption. Like, for instance, if we're speaking about infrastructure development, our infrastructure is dilapidating because the budget that's supposed to go and fix our infrastructure, our roads, our buildings, our historical sites, and whatnot for tourism, it's going into somebody's pocket, and all that is pocketed by greedy politicians who are putting undue pressure into officials who are trying to do their work. And there's one thing that we understand, that when they go to these people, they would say that it's either you do this for me or you lose your job. And it's problematic. It's a problematic society. So when we're dealing with corruption, deal with the head of corruption, and then we can deal with the smaller fishes that we've seen. So you can't come and say we've dealt with corruption just because they've held accountable a traffic officer who was collecting 20 rands on the streets. And yes, that is corruption, but that is a small fish in a bigger pond whereby there are sharks and there are dolphins that need to be arrested for putting our country or plunging our country into this a scourge that we're seeing today of a pandemic of load shedding. Also, last year, myself leading the pack of the UDM and Nguvu collective. We went to the Basic Education Portfolio Committee in Parliament, lamenting that ever since from 2015 and years before that, we have been talking about eradication of pit latrines, which is pit toilets, whereby in Limpopo, Moses Kotane fed into a pit latrine and died. Still today, those promises have not yet been fulfilled, and there's little to nothing that the department has done. What you see also in the Eastern Cape, recently we have seen that there's another child last year who died in a pit latrine. But the irony is that there was infrastructure development, schools infrastructure development budget that was sent into the Eastern Cape Provincial Education Department, but it was returned into National Treasury. There are two things that happened in South Africa. It's either money is not spent and sent back to National Treasury, and National Treasury commits that money to another department or to another province which has spent their own money, or that money, when spent, it goes into somebody's pocket. That is a problem we're having in South Africa. Hence, everything to cry for, and which...
And the day younger. Yes. I hear everything that you're saying, but I want us to lay it all on the table now. I hear your points, especially from the SONA, where you mentioned that it should have been a voice note instead of staging an event like that. But now, what is the UDM promising the people? Because now you're saying we're going to election, and here's an opportunity for the UDM to come and actually change our lives as citizens of this country. What is it that you're promising us, given the fact that how you did mention the part with the load shedding and the pit toilets and money that is not being utilized according to what is supposed to be utilized for? So how would you, as the UDM, come to me as an ordinary citizen of this country and say, this is what I'm going to do for you to better your life?
The UDM's manifesto will be launched on the 2nd of March. I think that's where we are going to delve much on that. However, we have taken an approach, and this is what we have been doing over the years, to go into our people and to go into constituencies, all sectors of society, whereby we listen to our people. What is it? What are the solutions that you see? Because at the end of the day, we are not leading stupid people who cannot think, who cannot come up with solutions. So our approach was, now, instead of you listening to politicians promising you this and that, what is it that you want us to do. We know that the first thing is basic services, you know, that needs to come. How then do you want us to implement that? And one of the things, and the greatest of things that came out of it, to saying that we need to professionalize the public service, because if it is not professionalized, it's cater, centric, whereby we are employing our comrades just because everybody must eat into the system. It becomes a problem because you get people who do not know what to do. They're not skilled for that. They're not educated for that. Like, for instance, if you're going into a situation whereby you need an engineer, how do you then employ somebody into a department that does with engineering, who does not even have a qualification for engineering or the skills to do that or experience to do that? It needs to be be professionalized. We need to remove, the political duress on top of our officials so that they're able to do their job. Our job as politicians, it is oversight. It is not to make decisions for the officials, but we need to have this oversight into making sure that whatever that needs to happen within a department and the budget that's there, it goes straight where it's supposed to go. That's number one. We spoke to, yes.
I hear what you're saying. And I'm going to come back to a point where you just said, you will go back and you'll listen to what we want. But the community has been speaking for so many years, for the past 30 years, in terms of what we want. And you've been, as the UDM, you've been in parliament for over 30 years now. And I am still not hearing anything in regards to the changes that we as the community... Look, I can give you a simple scenario. The community wants to have a viable environment whereby jobs are available, there's opportunities for young people, our voices are heard, and there's lack of, I'm not gonna say no corruption, because obviously it will always be there, it will be hidden under another name, but there is minimum corruption and there's more delivery from politicians, because politicians tend to be, this is a season where we speak nice to voters, to say, for you to vote for me, this is what I'm going to do. And earlier you mentioned, like I said, you mentioned part of load shedding, but I'm not hearing you coming to a solution. How are you going to deal with that issue of load shedding? How are you going to deal with that issue of pit toilets? You understand?
All right. Let's come here. For the past 27 years, UDM has been in the opposition benches of parliament. It has not been in power, whereby it leads government. And what we have been doing is what each and every other opposition parties, in fact, the best win that we have in South Africa is for South Africans, and the best gift that we have is to have a viable opposition. The opposition in South Africa is very strong. It stands for the people. Every political party which is an opposition, not just the UDM. That we need to realize. But then I think as well, we need to come to a point of understanding that opposition parties are opposition parties, are not in government. They do not control the public purse. And therefore, by not controlling the public purse, the only thing that we are limited to is oversight. And every time you hear us lamenting things in parliament, in legislatures and councils, is because we are elevating the voices of our people in order for those who are in power are able to do that which needs to be done. We have taken the government, the UDM leading that pack with other organizations, civic organizations. You'd remember last year when we went to court and we had said that some areas, like for instance, hospitals, schools, police stations, they need to be exempted from load shedding. That is what we have. This is part whereby the opposition has been doing the work for the people, forcing the government. In fact, the government does not need to be forced. It does not need to be petitioned to do what they are mandated to do. It's there. It's a prescript. You need to bring services to our people, and you need to do it in a manner that's coming. I'm coming to your issue of what we are going to do, right? Because that's where we're going. But I needed to come up to this, to this point. I needed to pass this point, because it goes back. Hence, even when we're talking to our people, we needed to go into an education of some kind of what is an opposition party in South Africa and what role do they play in the South African democracy so far. So we need to speak about these things and really explain them for our people to understand what are the limitations and why we come to them during voting time and said, hire us, because we need to change the status quo. We need to make sure that the what you call in Eskom, the power stations are working. One of the problems in Eskom is that the power stations are not maintained. Not that they are adequate of not carrying the load. It's because there's a lack of maintenance, and it's caused by one thing, which is corruption. So you need to get that in place. You need to put engineers in place who are going to, who knows and are going to put that aspect in place and make sure that if our stations are maintained, then they can carry the load. Secondly, you build more power stations. Over and above that, you bring the public private partnerships whereby people are able to produce their own electricity, so that more people are getting out of the grid and bringing down the load from Eskom in order for Eskom to carry your industries and so on. We've got your wind farms that have been installed, and part of those, our government is a part of those projects, but they are not maintained and they're not going well as they should in order to bring the load down from Eskom. We have your solar panels and solar power, solar energy that it has not yet been explored. We need to explore those avenues. But at the
it seems like load shedding has kicked in.
Oh, it's not us, no?
It's not us. We are here.
I think I got cut some.
Yeah, no. You are back on, my brother. But let's do this. Let's do this. Because I'm speaking on behalf of an ordinary citizen of South Africa as a voter. And I'm asking this question based on the fact that we all know, yes, there is the ruling party that is in government currently, that has been in government for the past 30 years. And then you get opposition parties that are there to actually oppose and actually try to better the lives of other people. That is why today you would say, vote for me as the official opposition so that when I come into power, I better your life. But now here's my question. With the little 2 cents that you've been getting from legislature as the UDM, what changes or what changes have you actually brought onto the community that would actually convince a person out there to come out and say, I am who I am right now because the UDM has tried to better my life with the little that they've been getting? Because from the reason why I'm asking you this question is based on the fact that we see oppositions in parliament, they're always fighting the ruling party and all that. But none of the oppositions can come up, especially the smaller parties, can come up and say, with the little 2 cents that we got, we managed to patch potholes, we managed to put in a ceiling into a school, we managed to open up a clinic and get medication in there. Because we're hearing them coming back and putting blame on the ruling party for them not delivering what they promised to deliver, and of which you actually right, you need to hold them accountable. But my worry is that now you are saying the UDM is here because Rona, we don't believe in Mickey Mouse. We want to give you a proper quality show.
Why can I clarify that question, Tebowone, by asking it this way?
Okay.
What Mr. Zikebe was saying about what needs to be done for load shedding to end and so on, engineers and so on, I think that is also what the ruling party has been saying. Like it's proclamations by political parties. Yet at the implementation phase, Mr. Zikebe, things do not happen as proclaimed by the ruling party or as other people would wish it for. What do you think is going wrong there? Do you think it's interference by the politicians of the ruling party, or do you think it's incompetence of those employed to govern there? And what therefore can any ruling party do to make sure that the people employed are competent and skilled to do that particular work? Because of course, you know what my colleague was putting a lot of pressure on you as an opposition political party to go and patch potholes, which definitely is not your work. But in terms of advocacy and lobby for the right things, what do you think is going wrong in the coal face of implementation?
Okay, I'm gonna answer both questions. South Africa has been lauded for having beautiful policies on paper. And it's true, we do have those policies, and they're workable policies if you read them. But there's a contrast, there's a divide between policy implementation and also implementation. There's that problem. Our government cannot implement, does not know to implement. If they implement, it is substandard. And why is it substandard? It's what you've just said. It's interference, political interference. We have seen political interference at UNISA. We have seen that at NSFAS, at every sector of government, whereby when services needs to go to our people, some politician who needs a kickback or whatever the case might be. Hence, now we get substandard service delivery to our people. But as well, to go back to the issue of what have we done in making sure that services are going to our people. Number one, as we said, patching potholes is in South Africa, it is illegal to go and patch a pothole by yourself as an ordinary South African or whoever it is. Go to the bylaws of each and every municipality. It is not allowed. But our people are doing it anyway because there's nothing that we can do but to do it anyway. So you need to have to do it within the ambit of the law. But if you look at the UDM, it's unfortunate that the media does not cover these things, even though we invite them. Just last year, we donated computers in the Eastern Cape. We built houses for older people whose houses, especially in flood stricken areas where there were floods and everything, and older people's houses, they flushed out. We built those houses. We went to KZN as well. We're part of the people who had donated huge amounts of money in order for our people in KZN who were stricken by floods, to be taken care of in one way or the other, to get something warm or food or whatever the case might be. The little that we put on, we've put on the case. Going to court for load shedding, it costs money. It is not for free. The lawyers and the senior counselors are they cost money, and it comes from what Tebogo has been talking about, the little that we're getting from the legislatures or parliament, whatever the case might be, those party funds. That is what we've used in order to fight that for our people. We have also, the president runs outside the public pass or legislature funds that we're getting. Every year on the 16th of December, President Wolomisa has a foundation which is Champions of the Environment. Last year, they raised just about 550 something, half a million of that. And 10 NGOs, schools for the blind, orphanages and so on, they benefited from that. They were chosen and to be beneficiaries from that fundraising efforts that he has been doing. Just to name a few of what us as just UDM, we have been doing for our people with the little that we're having. It's just that it is not on the media and so on. But these things we post on our social media so that our people can see this is what we're doing. It goes as far as it goes. However, we are not just sitting and blaming the government for these things, and there's nothing that you're doing. When kids fall into pit latrines, we are the ones who are putting up petitions for making sure and gathering signatures and everybody else. And that as well costs money, because you need to travel across the breadth of this country, speaking to organizations. For us to have been partnering with Nguvu Change Leaders and all of that, and have become one of them, it had to come with having these meetings from different provinces and so on, gathering people, traveling to parliament to go and speak on behalf of our people. So we're not just seated there and wallowing to saying that the ANC is not doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but the little that we can be able to reach, we are able to go and do it. But we can't close potholes, unfortunately. It is against the law, and we cannot operate outside the ambit of the law just because we want to do something right.
On the 3rd of, the 3rd of March, you will be launching your manifesto. 2nd of March, you'll be launching the party's manifesto. Give us details about that, when, where, and who is in attendance.
It's actually on the 2nd of March. We're launching it at Galaga Convention Center in Midrand, Johannesburg, Gauteng. In attendance, we are expecting our members from across South Africa in all 9 provinces will be represented. Unfortunately, as UDM, we can't bus everybody else into that event so that it becomes a stadium kind of event. We are going to go into Galaga. We are also expecting, we have invited ambassadors from other countries as our dignitaries. We are also expecting the traditional leaders, and also our people from the arts sector, the creative arts sector. We've had numerous discussions with those who are within the creative space, and they've been crying and decrying that no one is speaking for them, and they want their voices to be heard. Because you find that the creative sector or the creative arts, background artists, vocalists, actors, and so on, they do not get their royalties. Others go into acting. And when that product is done and plays on television, they're only getting paid for that particular time. And it ends there. When now it's been sold to other countries, sold to other stations and so on by production houses, they do not get their royalties and they do not get what is due to them, while their faces and their work has been shown across the world. So those are the things that we're going to be dealing with in that manifesto, to saying that we need to regulate and professionalize as well the creative sector, because they do not even have UIF when they're no longer working and out of a job. They do not have any other working benefits, so they're not treated as workers. So these are some of the things that we've picked up from our people as we're talking to them. So there'll be a representation of them in that, then our structures as well, from the youth structure to women and our student movements will be there.
I would have thought that the stronghold of the UDM is in the Eastern Cape, and maybe you would have wanted to launch your manifesto in the Eastern Cape, where a majority of your supporters should be in attendance, to give good optics of support for the party. Why would you choose such a small venue as Galaga Estate or Galaga Convention Center for your manifesto launch?
In 2023, which is last year, we celebrated our 26th year anniversary in the Eastern Cape, in our stronghold in Mthatha. We went to Mthatha Stadium, which takes about 10,000 people, and we overflowed that. And it's true, one would have said, let us go and, you know, put the optics in there. But remember that we are going into elections and putting optics and everything. People are no longer, they've woken up from the politics of optics and rhetoric. People want to see, quality and people who are going to speak the truth. We have a man at the helm whose integrity is unquestionable. He has not been embroiled in any scandals like other opposition leaders and so on, politicians. He has held this integrity for 27 years at the helm of the UDM. So optics is not, it's not a thing. I think you have seen how we do not brag about having to help our people about on a certain thing and whatnot forth. It is not the UDM style. What we do is we do this in a very dignified manner, which so that South Africans they see that UDM takes them seriously. It's not about putting up numbers there. Our people are on the ground on a daily basis campaigning for the UDM. UDM is
very much for your time. We appreciate very much the quality of service in this interview that you have provided. We hope that the people will take you as seriously as you have as you take yourselves, and all the best for the 2nd of March.
Thank you very much, and thank you up to you and to the viewers at home. And we're hoping that they will fire the ANC and hire the UDM. Thank you.
We'll be back with another interview in about a minute or so. That was the UDM's National Secretary, Mr. Yonga Madzikebe. Thank you very much.